There's rich, very rich, and then there's the people who might pay the most estate tax, depending on which way the presidential election goes. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Hillary Clinton is out with a proposal to raise the estate tax for the largest estates. This is tax on an inheritance. Marketplace's Lewis Wallace is following this. Lewis, remind us who actually pays this tax.
So right now we're talking about a few thousand people a year out of the whole land with estates valued above $5 million. Many of these people are in the top 1% or 0.1% of earners. And because this tax applies to so few people, it's not a huge slice of the federal budget.
And how would this new proposal from Hillary Clinton change things?
It would raise the top rates so that at the very, very top, people with an estate worth at least $500 million, the rate would be 65%, up from 40%. And on the other end of that scale, more people would pay the tax under her proposal. Anyone with an estate worth over $3.5 million would pay 45%. Hillary Clinton's campaign has been consistent in saying, I'll quote their website here, that they want to make sure the wealthiest pay their fair share. Trump opposes the estate tax. He calls it a death tax. And here he is in August.
American workers have paid taxes their whole lives, and they should not be taxed again at death. It's just plain wrong, and most people agree with that.
The main focus of his tax platform is reducing taxes on businesses and not on the wealthy.
All right, Lewis, thank you very much. What's now being called the largest data breach ever on a single source involves 500 million Yahoo users and what that company calls a state-sponsored cyber attack. Names, email addresses, dates of birth, and passwords that were jumbled up in an effort to make them more secure were stolen. Regular passwords, maybe not, and probably not payment cards or bank accounts either. Another question going forward is how this is going to affect Verizon's intention of paying $5 billion to buy Yahoo. Marketplace's senior tech correspondent Molly Wood has more on that.
Verizon was apparently just told about this hack in the last few days, so they will be looking closely, and in fact, regulators will be looking closely at how long Yahoo's known about the breach and why they didn't disclose it during the bidding war for acquisition. There are laws around what public companies have to say in terms of reporting things like data breaches, especially if they handle payment information. Whether it is enough to call off that deal with Verizon is unknown. Verizon is really counting on the traffic and counting on the scale of Yahoo to grow its business really rapidly and put it in better competition with Google and Facebook.
Marketplace's Molly Wood, as for this hack being state-sponsored, a computer security expert told us today it's possibly some country trying to crack Yahoo to spy on its own citizens. Let's check in now with our election series about ways for the country to get more serious about long-term opportunities and threats, the ones that maybe don't fit into a single budget year or election cycle. The late writer and social critic Kurt Vonnegut suggested this to me during an interview. He did this later in life, and he says to me, what if this country had a secretary of the future, you know, to consider actions that might play out in 20 or 50 years? We asked you what that person should focus on if we get one. A lot of you wrote wanting someone in power to keep an eye on those cars under development that drive themselves. One listener is Ethan Meadows, an architect in Hinsdale, Illinois.
The way that cars and urbanism have happened in the last century has already brought a lot of division. We talk a lot about white flight in urban design and how just the money and development went to the suburbs, came out of the cities, and that stranded a lot of communities in our cities that we now consider to be underprivileged or underserved.
That's interesting. And your concern is that if you can just hop on some sort of autonomous vehicle, it might make longer commutes easier, and that might exacerbate that trend?
Exactly. So right now, Chicago has sprawled all the way out to the Fox River, right? There's a city called DeKalb that's another 45 minutes away. Right now, you know, there's a handful of people that'll commute all the way from DeKalb into the city of Chicago. But there's this idea that's been floating around in Chicago for a really long time that the next band of suburbs, the next band of development is going to be all the way out to DeKalb. And as these cities continue to sprawl and sprawl, we leave spaces in the center of our cities. And then I imagine if we go even further in the suburbs of our cities, places of urban decay.
But on a different day, if you woke up in a better mood on this subject, you might envision the driverless cars helping people live in the urban core, and then you could just summon one of these things on the occasional time you have to go grocery shopping or something.
I think there's a great potential here if we reinvest in our infrastructure the right way for driverless cars to bring our communities closer and closer together. You know, imagine the parking lot out in front of a big box store that can become maybe a walkable area, maybe some green space, or even an opportunity for some environmental sustainable water control sorts of things. I think there's a lot of potential if you can start to think about every single place where a car used to sit all day as doing something else.
So I appreciate the fact that you didn't think that Kurt Vonnegut's notion of why don't we appoint a secretary of the future at the cabinet level to view policy with this longer term prism, you didn't think that was so crazy?
Part of me is afraid that it would become a sort of hyper-partisan position, which would just be kind of terrifying, frankly. But I think as long as this would be a person who could see themselves or choose to see themselves as above pure partisanship and actually more in the interests of Americans broadly, I think it could be really interesting.
Marketplace listener Ethan Meadows is an architect with Parsons Architects in Hinsdale, Illinois. Mr. Meadows, thank you for this.
Thank you, David.
I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.